the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome back to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast here on the CBP Media Network, where we are not Team Barbie, not Team Ken, Team Bitcoin. My name is Joey, here as always with my co-host, Len. Buddy, what is going on over there in your basement?
The same as always. Team Bitcoin. I like that. But you know what? Team Bitcoin covers a great swath of people. Some people think they are in Team Bitcoin. They are not. And we'll be tackling a lot of this today. There's so much on the agenda, but I like it. Team Bitcoin. What's going on over there, Joey?
Not much, man. Busy day today. Holiday Monday, obviously, up here in the Great White North. Did a lot of yard work. We got a lot of rain yesterday, so I wasn't able to get out and do my yard. Have to keep it tidy for the move. We did go golfing, me and three of my best friends on Saturday. Where? First time I played 18 at Carlisle Golf and Country Club. Burlington.
That's North Burlington. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a 36 hole course. We played 18. I got to tell you, Len, I used to be so bad. I worked at a course called Silver Lakes with my college roommate, Kyle, God rest his soul, back when I was like 20, 21, maybe after my third year in university. I was a terrible golfer then. I still am like a not great golfer now, but I am so much better than almost everybody else I know, except for maybe one of my buddies. I'll tell you, buddy, I can absolutely crush it off the tee. Most of the time it's pretty straight, but I don't know how to get like my short game up. Like I got no touch, you know, I got no touch, yeah. Like inside 80 yards. It's tough for me. I don't know how hard to swing the club. I feel like I'm using the pitching wedge. Maybe I should be using something else. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Ditch the range ball. Get some Pro Vs and you're good to go.
I bought balls at Canadian Tire on Saturday morning.
I use range balls. I'm the guy that's always using range balls because I don't care how I play. Plus, if it's on the green, nobody's going to say that range ball is theirs. It's mine. All mine. So, yeah, that's a trick, man. Range ball, nobody's going to claim that sucker. So, yeah,
so, it's easy to find. So we had a great week on the show last week. We had, obviously... We had a cancellation. Mario had to back out last minute. We're going to get him back on, though, when he's got some time. You were on with Mark Morano Wednesday night. That was honestly, man, like bombshell. I was watching that on my couch because I had a bit of a cramp from dinner. I don't know what I ate for dinner, but I had a bit of a cramp. And I was laughing out loud. My wife is like thinking I'm some kind of psycho cackling like a hyena out on the couch. She's in the bedroom. And I got to tell you, that was a great show. Mark was absolutely amazing. Brought the receipts. He had a deck. He had a YouTube video to watch. He's not his first rodeo. And then obviously the flagship last week too. This week, we got a special guest with us tonight. We'll introduce him in a second. You guys know who he is. You know him. You love him. Always a great set of analysis from this young man. So we're happy that he's with us. We'll talk to him in a second. But we had a cancellation for Wednesday. So we're trying to book a last minute guest. If you know somebody, I reached out to Ryan Griggs, who runs the Regenesance program in the States. They're doing regenerative farming. I mentioned I was wearing his shirt last week. So if he's available, we're going to get him. If not, I'm all ears. If you got an idea for a guest, let me know. Summertime, if you know podcasts and listen to podcasts often enough, there's tons of cancellations in the summer. Everybody's busy. Everyone's doing stuff, especially as the weather starts to turn a little cooler and the sun starts to set a little earlier. So Len, all that housekeeping down, do you want to do...
Let's nail off the boost because I want to say thank you to everybody that did provide us a boost this past week. And the top five boosts are as follows: Doug and Roop at 525 sats. Great show. Mark is a top guy. In support, I bought some corn, ate some steak, and drove my gas powered car. I shall never eat Z bugs. Joe Ronan, 1000 sats. Sorry to hear this got flagged on YouTube. I applaud you for NGAF. Stay humble, stack sats. Joe Ronan again, another 1,000 sats. So he's in for $2,000 for this one. Shout out to all the ride or die CBP freaks in the YouTube live stream. Great odds for the draw. Stay humble, stack sats. My boots will moon once the sats cards land in the fountain wallet. So I guess you mean these boosts. Let's go accelerate. Yes, 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 agreed. Boss strategy, 2,345 sats. Shout out to the CBP Poise and the Brick an Edmonton-based startup. Let's go Oilers. And Rander, 333, three sats. This was a phenomenal podcast. Mark went full Michael Saylor mode and rolled downhill the whole time. He starts laughing. Great energy. I love it. Agreed. It was a fun time. I should have even been there. I should just walked away. Let him go.
I said to Kenzie after the interview, I'm like, this is exactly the kind of show you dream of. There's like three or four kinds of guests. I personally like the ones where, if I think about the recent one I did with Drew Armstrong, a lot of fun. He's around my age. We're kind of shooting the shit about a lot of different things. He stays after the talk. We got a lot in common, right? You know, kind of growing up in the same era. Love those shows. The other ones I like just as much are the ones where you just show up and don't say anything at all. You ask, I think you might have asked them five questions, maybe the whole interview, something like that. And he absolutely destroyed. He was on fire the whole time.
Yeah, he got to keep going longer. Unfortunately, he had to leave after 45 minutes. He stayed almost an hour. I've been trying to get him out because I didn't want to screw his schedule up in this case, you know, make sure that he adheres to his schedule. But you know what? Thank you for coming on the show. We'll have him back and hopefully for a longer time so he can spit fire for a longer period of time and we're not under time constraints. But last thing I just want to say before we move forward, remember, this show is satire. Everything is educational. It's all for fun. So tongue-in-cheek stuff, all that stuff. So, yeah, that's all I got to say about this. Anything else you want to rhyme off, Joey?
The price of Bitcoin, $29,156 US. And I'll tell you what, Len, maybe before we start with we're going to start with the Fitch US dollar downgrade and the MSTR at the money equity offering. And we're bringing in none other than SB from the Woke Antidote of the Bloomberg, the terminally elite. What's going on there, brother? How are you?
I'm doing great. I got the Bloomberg right in front of me so we can have some real-time Bloomberg analysis if we need it. So, you know, whatever you guys got, throw at me and I can utilize whatever I need to do to get you guys the answer.
Joey, this is more your cup of tea. I'm going to sit back and listen to you guys riff on this one.
Well, okay, I want to know about the Fitch downgrade. And I think the story that I've heard, maybe just to sum it up, Fitch is a ratings agency. You can, you know, make hay about the legitimacy of these agencies. Obviously, there's that famous story that everyone is talking about now from 08, I believe, where S&P, Standard & Poor's, downgraded the U.S. And I believe the amount of time between that downgrade and the CEO's resignation to, quote, spend more time with his family was 18 days. So, you know, these guys, the U.S. government doesn't really play around when it comes to the ratings agencies, certainly not when it comes to rating their debt. And so Fitch downgraded the U.S. from AAA to AA+, was it, SB? I'm not sure exactly what the rating change was, but I think that this really signifies a couple things. In their analysis, I don't have it in front of me, but I'm speaking from memory. In their analysis, they're citing the same things that the three of us talk about a lot. And I think a lot of Bitcoiners talk about the debt load, the next three to five years of likely difficulty in executing, continuing to execute on this debt-based monetary and fiscal policy. And it sounds to me like they're also a little worried about the dollar. I think I got that right, but if you got some other things to talk about, let's hear them. Like, what are you hearing in the financial circles?
Yeah, I mean, I think it breaks down into a couple camps. The fiat bros obviously don't care about it at all, think Fitch is nonsense, Fitch is the number three rating agency by far. People don't care about them that much. Mostly they're just only used as a tiebreaker when Moody's and S&P disagree on something. And a lot of companies out there don't even use Fitch. A lot of companies are only rated by Moody's and S&P. So that's definitely one of the camps. There is a small camp in finance that thinks like we do. But of course that's small, because you're going to go insane working in the fiat world if you don't have a strong head screwed on you and you actually have these thoughts that the U.S. is overlevered. So I think that's one thing. I did want to bring this angle up where if you look at the U.S., because people were saying, you know, I'd rather invest in Apple or Microsoft over the U.S. So I wanted to bring some stats into the mix here. So when I look at companies in my space, I'm looking at companies to get an A corporate rating. You probably need something like 2x leverage or less. You probably need something like 25% cash flow as a percentage of net debt. So if you look at that from the perspective of what the U.S. is, like very, very simple numbers, we're taking in $20 trillion of revenue. We don't know what the earnings are, the free cash flow. That's what the deficit would be. So that's $2 trillion annually right now, roughly. And then we've got the $30 trillion or so in net debt. So we're currently rocking, if you put these into corporate stats, absolutely terrible. I mean, this would absolutely be a triple C rated junk company. If I look at these compared to other companies, let's take Apple, $165 billion cash, $100 billion of debt, $100 billion annual free cash flow. So Apple AA rated, they could pay back their debt in 1 year with cash flow. Microsoft AAA rated, $110 billion of cash in the balance sheet, $80 billion of debt, $60 billion annual free cash flow. So they could pay their debt down in about a year and a quarter. The US at negative $2 trillion free cash flow, $30 trillion of debt. That's just out of control. That's just completely obnoxious. So I think that's helpful. And yes, obviously you can't compare the US to a corporate credit. The corporate credits are in the US, they're driving earnings from them, what have you. But I think that's helpful context to frame just how out of control the US fiscal situation is. And anyone claiming that basically the only reason we can do this is because we're the reserve currency. So the fact that we might lose that soon is going to be bad news for 99% of people in the US.
I part of me with this Apple and Microsoft thing, first of all, that's a great breakdown there on the difference between being a corporate, a corporate double or triple and a sovereign double or triple. The thing that bothers me about the downgrade, I think more than anything, is how can Fitch, maybe this is me not knowing the broader story, how can Fitch or Standard & Poor's or any of these other ratings agencies downgrade the US without downgrading everyone else? I subscribe to the milkshake theory. I think that if you start downgrading the US, sort of by default, you have to start downgrading the other sovereigns, because if the dollar collapses, the treasuries underpin the entire financial system. And so if you start showing signs of weakness in the reserve or the country that's the reserve, don't you have to also downgrade all these other nation states? I don't see anything to that effect happening. Maybe it's kind of a sentiment story more than it is an official rating story, but it seems to me like maybe it's a way to express the view that overall sovereign debt is less reliable than it's ever been before, or less reliable than it was 2 weeks ago. Is there any sense to that? Is this a broad strokes move from Fitch to express that view, or do I have that wrong?
No, I'm not sure the system would work that great with, if you said, like, for example, El Salvador is triple C by the agencies, because of course they don't like what's going on there. So is it really fair that you could have this incredible, you could have a Microsoft like business in El Salvador, but should they be rated triple C? Probably not. But to that point, if we're worried about the US, then maybe Apple, they got a lot of manufacturing reliance on China, that should be weighing in on the Apple. So I don't know how aggressively Fitch and the other agencies are thinking about that, but that should be in their risk factors going forward. If there's poor relations between those two countries, absolutely. I think the same thing could be said for all these semiconductors that rely on Taiwan Semi. If there's an issue with Taiwan Semi, you want to, like, there's going to be some rating downgrades for semiconductor companies that are immediately going to lose the ability to get their chips manufactured. So maybe it would play out more in that sense of when it comes, as opposed to just abroad. If Fitch is taken down the US by one notch, it's going to have to do everything.
Do you think there's any credence to this idea that, like, Tether needs to be worried? Tether, I think.
Oh, that's a topic we're going to be talking about later. This is a great discussion.
So let's talk about it a bit. Tether is, I think, a top 15 U.S. Treasury holder, right? They hold more T-bills than almost any other country on the planet, and they don't seem to be halting their purchase program for T-bills. They're buying less Bitcoin than they originally said they were going to buy in the last quarter anyway, their most recent attestation. And so, like, should people who I don't know if I'm like a Tether supporter, but I have faith that Tether is not a Ponzi scheme. My co-host, maybe not so much, but I don't think it's a Ponzi over there. I think they're generally doing the right things, and they seem to be more or less a stalwart. Should Tether be concerned about a downgrade? What about other countries that hold, you know, U.S. bonds? Japan, I think, holds a lot of U.S. bonds too, right? They might be like the second or third largest holder. And so you kind of have these correlations. Does this matter to them? Do you see like a change in the treasury holdings of sovereigns or a company like Tether? I really don't know. What do you think?
Well, what's their alternative? I mean, right?
That's it. It's the most. What does Fossoy say there, Len? It's the prettiest horse at the glue factory, right? Is that where we are now? It's kind of the last, you know, it's truly the milkshake kind of playing out here in treasuries too.
Yeah, it's the tallest of the pygmies, right?
I have a question that really I don't think it's been addressed yet, and the downgrade from AAA to AA+ or whatever it is now by Fitch. What are the ramifications for this? Because I listened to Kamala Harris. She says this is AA+, so it doesn't sound all that bad. But realistically, what does this mean?
Best grade, and this starts with two A's, double
yeah,
A.
Yeah, so that seems pretty good. If I got two A's in the report card, I'd be happy. But realistically, what does this mean for the U.S. and the global financial system?
Yeah, I mean, realistically, it doesn't mean that much. Because, and I'll use the corporate example of if you look at, okay, so like Apple trades with AA, Disney single A, Microsoft triple A. There's really not that much difference. There might be 5 basis points or 10 basis points. So maybe if Microsoft can raise a bond at, you know, the 10-year treasury plus 70, maybe Apple could do it at plus 75 or plus 80. They don't care about that. So I think what the impact would be, it's if countries stop buying it. Again, we just talked about there's not really an alternative. And as we can clearly see from the interest rate movement recently, it's not like rates, their number one determinant is based on the credit rating. No, the determinant is a variety of factors. And I would put the actual rating of U.S. debt very low on the list of where yields are going to be trading. So in reality, I don't think it means that much at all, but I think it's just kind of that sign of the collapse where kind of everybody knows that there's an issue here. I want to read to you guys too. I'm looking at S&P for the United States. So they have their AA rating. So this is interesting. So they're in their downside scenario for the US, they say they could lower the rating if unexpected negative political developments weigh in the strength of American institutions and the effectiveness of long-term policymaking, or jeopardize the dollar status as the world's leading reserve currency. So that's out there in the ether of, yeah, you know, Fitch is doing the downgrade. S&P is out here saying that, yeah, if the U.S. might lose their reserve currency, we're taking down their rating. It's death by 1,000 cuts. It's not like we're going to lose the percentage of U.S. trading in oil is going to go to zero tomorrow. But if it goes down a couple percent a year, yeah, that's going to be a negative long term.
Well, it doesn't have to be catastrophic, right? Like you're saying there, death by 1,000 cuts, I think, is something people underestimate. You're seeing the cuts everywhere. Domestically, obviously, like there's a lot of domestic policy over there that you know, is, I'm sure, causing you concern. I know it is because we talk, and I'm sure it's causing a lot of Americans concern. And it's that same policy that's going to have ramifications. The other thing too, like, I think it's called the Triffin dilemma, right? Where invariably, if you are the reserve currency in a system like this, at some point your domestic interests will come into conflict with the interests of the country who's using with the interests of the same currency as the reserve. And so I think you're getting closer to that now, right? Sort of picking between defending your currency and continuing to borrow to sustain certain financial operations or fiscal, you know, initiatives. It's not feasible long term. Now, okay, one more question on this, unless you got another one, Len.
No, I'm good with moving on. So yeah, that's the last question.
I just want to ask one more thing here. You said no alternative. I mean, we all think the alternative to bonds might be Bitcoin. Is there really no commentary about this in the midwit financial sector in which you operate, sir? Nothing?
Well, I think this is a perfect segue into MicroStrategy, because what Michael Saylor, if I do the job for you guys, maybe I have some experience doing a podcast. So Michael Saylor, his new talking point is that sovereign wealth funds want to get exposure to Bitcoin, but there's absolutely no way they could get that via buying MicroStrategy because his market cap is $5 billion right now. If you're a sovereign wealth fund that wants to buy 10 million of Bitcoin tomorrow, 10 billion of Bitcoin tomorrow, Saudi Arabia, what? It's $700 billion of their sovereign wealth fund. You wouldn't be able to do it. You would, if you wanted to buy all of MicroStrategy, presumably you could, or you could buy close to all of it, but you would throw it completely out of whack and then it wouldn't be following the Bitcoin price anymore. Mm-hmm. So his whole argument is that when the Bitcoin ETF opens up, then it's very easy to throw 10 billion of demand out there. Then the ETF sucks it up and that impacts the Bitcoin price. So taking that to what you were saying, the Bitcoin market's just too small to matter at all. I mean, there's a variety of factors why it wouldn't work. But, you know, in me working in some of these institutions, it's too much career risk to put yourself out there. You wouldn't be able to, it wouldn't be more than a 1% allocation. I mean, I think Mass Mutual is one of the few asset managers who's put money into Bitcoin, and it was just a tiny, tiny little percentage of their money versus their entire asset portfolio. So yeah, it's death by a thousand cuts the other way. It's a little increases here and there, but in terms of as a replacement for the bond market, I mean, that's going to take a while, if ever. But I think certainly to your point about the US in general, I think if there was a great alternative that could feed the demand, people would absolutely be interested. Arguably, other countries like Russia and China are already looking to do that. But we have a ways to go. But I don't see anyone in their right mind that isn't under kind of the US propaganda that would go, yeah, I'm confident about the US's fiscal situation for the next decade. That's a joke.
Well, let's talk about the MSTR offering then. They picked up, I have the tweet up here,
467 Bitcoin for $14.4 million. That's actually the second smallest purchase they made in the past year. If I go back in time, 301 Bitcoin was a purchase they made September 20th of last year. And every other purchase was higher than this in terms of number of Bitcoin. So it's a relatively small purchase. So, and it's 153,000 Bitcoin they have in reserve, just about.
Tons of Bitcoin on reserve. SB, talk to me about the nature of an offering like this. Why and how are they continuing to offer equity in MicroStrategy in order to buy Bitcoin? Talk to me about this kind of, you know, leveraged long position they're taking using the MSTR equity. I think a lot of people are confused about this. To be honest with you, you know, you and I both listen to that Natalie Brunell Sailor podcast. Mm-hmm. Every time I hear him say it, it reminds me kind of the mechanism, but if you don't mind, explain it to the listeners and viewers.
Yeah. So the way that I think about it is that Micro, the 150K of Bitcoin worth around what, 4.5 billion as of today, the software company, you can quibble with what it is worth, what it was worth. I'll put that around a billion. I mean, it could be less, could be more, but it was around a billion before they started buying Bitcoin. So that's about $5.5 billion of value. And then they've got about $2 billion of debt. So you remove that and the equity should be trading at $3.5 billion equity value. You add the $2 billion of debt, that's $5.5 billion enterprise value. But the equity is trading at $5.5 billion market cap. So you add the $2 billion of debt, you've got a nice premium there. And so there's two questions I think that arise from there is one, why is there the premium there? And I think Sailor would tell you that investors are entrusting their capital with Sailor to have a leveraged play on Bitcoin. So it's not, MicroStrategy is not only worth the value of their company in Bitcoin minus the debt, but you're paying Sailor to manage it for you to get leveraged returns on Bitcoin. So that's what he would say. Alternatively, you could just say there's so much demand for Bitcoin out there from people that can't invest in Bitcoin specifically. They're looking around, they're saying, I don't know if I love GBTC for a variety of reasons. There's a number of downsides there. And frankly, it's not really tracking the price all that well lately. Same thing with the futures ETF. So what's the next best thing that I could do, especially if I'm able to buy equities, which most investment companies can? I'll buy MicroStrategy. Okay, so we've established that there's a premium to MicroStrategy. So Sailor is being a genius exploiting this, because Sailor issues MicroStrategy equity that says it's trading at a premium to Bitcoin. What does he then do? He takes the proceeds, he buys more Bitcoin. What does that mean? MicroStrategy is going to go up because it's going to continue trading at a premium. So it's this vicious, virtuous cycle. And people like Jim Chanos on Twitter, a famous short seller, he looks at this and he hates it. And he goes, this is Ponzi-like. It's trading at a ridiculous premium. Well, okay, if it's true, if you disagree with that valuation, then he should be selling as much equity as possible to take advantage of this. And what you would typically do, so there was arguments earlier in 2023 from FinTwit people, whatever, they were saying like NVIDIA was 250, was 300, it had gone up from 120. And people out there were saying, you know what, rather than NVIDIA buying back stock, which they have a program to do, they should really be selling stock right now. And people would mix it up and say, why would you do that? And the point would be, okay, if your true value of your stock is worth 100 and you can sell stock at 300, sell it. And then maybe you'd issue the cash. You'd have the cash for a rainy day. You could argue that I think DoorDash bought a company at like 220 share of DoorDash. It went down to 50. Square bought Afterpay. Their stock was around 200 when they did that, I think. Now it's around 60. So there's companies out there that have issued equity for deals like this. So that's one way to think about it. But then the opposite of that is going to be the parallel to that is if MicroStrategy is going to be issuing equity, issue as much equity as possible, but then keep the machine going by buying Bitcoin with it. So that's what he's doing. It's beautiful. It's amazing. I've been critical on this show a little bit of him using so much debt to buy Bitcoin, but I absolutely love what he's doing with the equity issuances.
I have a question with this one. Who the heck is, and you laid it out pretty good in terms of the valuation of the company, in terms of their software side and how much debt they have and how much Bitcoin they have in their balance sheet. But realistically, who's buying this? Is it people that are just simply looking to track the price of Bitcoin through buying up a stock? Because what I was thinking, and I'm going to run this both by you guys. Can somebody in the States, any company, set up a shell corporation in Canada to take advantage of the ETFs we have here? We have like half a dozen or so Bitcoin ETFs. And wouldn't that be a more direct way of buying Bitcoin and you can manage it yourself rather than dealing with MicroStrategy?
So two part answer to this. Number one, some shorts are buying it. So 28% of the stock is shorted. So when you short that much, that is susceptible to a short squeeze when you have to cover it. So there's some demand there. I'm on the Bloomberg right now. Let's see who's been buying more of it lately. Fidelity pops up right there. Fidelity's bought a lot lately. Who else? Morgan Stanley's bought a lot lately. Invesco.
Come on.
Does it show the amounts by any chance or just
like these guys? I just want to point out one more time. Fidelity's been in the Bitcoin game for a long time. A lot of Fidelity alums made it onto Bitcoin. Nick Carter, Matt Walsh, guys like that have been in Fidelity's camp and are now Bitcoin people. And, you know, I hate to say it, but crypto people too. So I'm not surprised to see them. But these other companies who poo-poo it in their reports, in their research, and in their public statements, these guys are all buying MSTR. Like, what are we talking about here? Directionally, this is all going one way. I like this. I'm on this 1,000 cuts tip now. Like the cuts are coming faster and faster here. And people ignore this stuff at their own peril. Anyway, SB, continue, please.
What's beautiful too is that so when MicroStrategy's stock goes up and when there's a lot more stock out there, the index funds have to buy it to replicate the index. So, you know, a lot of people have been complimentary of Buffett for buying Apple all those years ago, with part of it being he just locked away a huge share of Apple stock that the indices were to be forced to buy as all of this stuff goes to, I mean, man, every 401k is an ETF. It's not a mutual fund now. It's just managed for what stocks are in the market. It's buying Amazon, Apple, Facebook, all that stuff. So if you look at some of the biggest holders in MicroStrategy, it is your Vanguards and BlackRocks. And no, it's not a conspiracy theory. It's just, that's what happens. That's how the market gets organized. But if you look at where like Vanguard holds it, it's Vanguard Total Stock Market Index Fund, Vanguard Small Cap Index Fund, Vanguard Small Cap Growth, Vanguard Russell 2000 Growth. So in essence, Saylor knows there is a perpetual bid for his stock because when he's selling it. Now, that's not going to cover everything. It could still decline, but he's basically taking advantage of this robust. He's taking advantage of presenting an opportunity to get price exposure to a very hard asset to get price exposure to in the most regulated, most liquid market out there, which is the U.S. equity market. And I think it's totally genius.
Do you, Boomer in the chat is asking a good question. I think this is probably not true, but I don't want to say it unless I know. And I think you might know. Is it possible that these, you know, super majors are buying MSTR outside of those index funds? I don't even know if you'd be able to see this. Maybe you can, maybe you can't. Outside of those index funds to cover or hedge against a short Bitcoin position. I don't think they can even take a short spot Bitcoin position. But is that possible? Or is that like a way, is there a way to see or a way to infer from who owns MSTR whether or not that's a view being expressed through buying MSTR stock?
Well, I mean, no, I don't know. I don't think you can see that. I mean, maybe they could be, but I would say that that's a difficult one because, as we all know, Micro just gets out of control in terms of their premium when the market rips and Bitcoin rips. So that would be a tough trade to put on if we rip here over the next few months or 6 months. Say Saylor, and I think probably you guys too. There's a lot of positives potentially unrolling in Bitcoin over the near term.
Yeah, I'm buying like the bull market's coming. I have I just had another question. I forgot it now. Oh, okay. In your view, given that you have some exposure to this realm, maybe not directly to Bitcoin miners in your day to day, but obviously on this show we talk a lot about Bitcoin miners. I think the three of us probably agree that they're not a great way to invest. But do you think there's more risk if I kind of unpack the risk between MSTR and the miners for now? MSTR's immediate term risk is that the Bitcoin price doesn't rip and they have problems with the debt they've issued at some, you know, maturity date or a couple of the maturity dates coming up. Maybe something happens to Saylor, who knows, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And the ETF, of course, too, is a big one. I think it's a big one. I know that there's talk about, well, ETFs are great for sovereign wealth. I think a lot of retail is in MSTR. And I think guys like Fidelity, BlackRock, et cetera, are in MSTR because of the Bitcoin exposure. That's my personal view. The other side of that is the miners. The miners have, you know, electricity risk, execution risk, ownership risk, nonsense ESG initiatives at the state or federal level, et cetera, et cetera. Do you have a view on which one of those risks is greater? And is there any other commentary in the space about which one of those risks is greater? Because it seems to me like if you want high beta, you can get it from the miners too. And some of those miners, you know, a little bit of unit bias here, but a company like Cathedra has a chance to 5x in a way that MSTR probably doesn't during a bull run. You know, we talk on the show, or not on the show, but in the private chat about BIGG, the Canadian stock that, you know, I think Len and I wrote it from like 3 cents to like $5 a few years ago. And, you know, like those little mining stocks, those little exposure stocks can really take off. Where do you think the risk is greater? Is the risk greater with MSTR or is it greater with the miners? If you had to pick one of the two, where would you want to park your money before the ETF shows up?
Yeah, so I'll answer this two ways. Yeah, I think one, you have to, with MicroStrategy, the premium, it's not necessarily going to stay as high as it is if there's an ETF. I think that's probably very clear. If you listen to Saylor, this most recent earnings, he is now kind of trying to sway the narrative and say that there's an inherent advantage with MicroStrategy because you're essentially, he's calling it, you're getting a yield now, but he's saying that you're investing in MicroStrategy to get that leverage play to have Saylor and the team doing that for you. But I think where you would say what the, if you're talking about Micro's debt, so yes, MicroStrategy's got, you know, the December 2025 convertibles. They've got 27, 28 maturities. But I would counter that and say that the miners, a lot of them have a significant amount of debt and they're carrying that at much higher interest rates too. And they're carrying that based on collateral that if the value of that collateral goes down or these miners can't issue as much equity to pay off the debt, then they're going to be done in with that. And I would say the perfect example, of course, is that I'm forgetting the name now, the big miner that went bankrupt. BlackRock has invested in.
Yeah, it's keeping my mind. Yeah, they were
Core Scientific.
Yeah, they were 20 exahash.
So Core Scientific, they had a ton of debt. That's why they went bankrupt. Hilariously, BlackRock is their biggest financier in the bankruptcy. So that goes to show you the ESG risk. So yeah, I think the miners, I would say from the retail perspective, what's difficult about the miners is that it requires that level of analysis. You've got so many variables. You've got what premium is it trading at? Do they have the HODL strategy? Are they selling? Like CleanSpark, now they're HODLing, right? Their strategy is previously selling. So there's all these things you have to keep track of. And so alternatively, you could just say, yeah, I'm going to buy MicroStrategy and not have to worry about all that stuff. The big worry, totally agree with you, it would be the premium that the company is trading at collapses if there's an ETF. But then, of course, the alternative would be if there's an ETF, we're fucking ripping. And it does not, I don't really care that much. Well, Frank, not only do I not care if the premium is down a little bit, the premium might even increase because the thought would be he's just going to issue a bunch more and buy a bunch more Bitcoin.
I'm going to give you a little bit of insight here that from my point of view, a miner is only as good as its hash rate. And that is in conjunction to its peers. If its peers, everybody else is adding equipment to their network, then every miner should be adding equipment to their network as well, just to keep pace. MicroStrategy doesn't have that same problem. They buy Bitcoin, they add it to their balance sheet. That's it. It doesn't matter what's going on with the hash rate. Does not matter to them. The price of Bitcoin matters to them, but the price of Bitcoin also matters to the miners as well. So the miners have not just to deal with the price of Bitcoin, the price of electricity, but also what their peers are doing. They have to keep pace with them or else they'll fall behind.
And the halving. I mean,
yeah. Do the miners really trade on those fundamentals? So Josh Olshewitz, Carpe Noctem, does a couple of good videos a week on YouTube, and he had one last week on the miners, and he's basically going up and down the list on based on hash rate and even some geographic risk. And the ones you would expect based on fundies to be trading a lot higher just are not. And so that's another problem with miners, right? You think you're making the right decision, and everyone else disagrees with you for some unknown reason. They don't like the name. They don't like the CEO. Someone said Web3 in a call or something like that. And you're fungooled, right? Like after that, there's nothing you can do. And that's why I personally like MSTR more than the miners. I don't own any MSTR. I'd rather just buy the underlying for the time being, but I don't think it's a bad way to get people into Bitcoin. It's a top of the funnel move. Now, SB, you've been very generous with your time. I appreciate you coming on kind of short notice. I think we only told you, late last week. So do you have any closing comments, first of all? And second of all, in the chat, Boomer is asking if Woke Antidote is going to release something soon. I am actually wondering the same thing. There's been lots of good Kamala Harris content, Hunter Biden content. What else can we say, Len, to get this show demonetized? Ukraine content, vaccine content. I'm waiting. We're all waiting. What's the latest here? What have you been up to?
Look, so one of my favorite podcasters of all time, Bill Simmons, he just took a 6-week break. He's in the midst of it. He released one episode, and now he's going back to his break. So the Woke Antidote, it's just on a break. We'll be back. Look, the Republican debate season should be off the hook in terms of the shenanigans that we're going to get on the debate stage. If anybody remembers 2016 and what we got, that was just it. I mean, there's no words to describe some of the stuff we saw. So yes, we will be back, and shout out to Boomer, it was, that wants us back. We really appreciate that. We appreciate all the fans. And look, we'll be talking Bitcoin too, because ultimately, I think you guys are, I am. There's a lot of bullish signs to look forward to. So I'll say, yeah, maybe with my closing words here, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling pretty good right now. The DCA is rolling, and we'll see what the next few months brings us.
We love it. We love it. God bless SB. We will talk to you very soon, I'm sure, my friend.
All right. Cheers, guys. Thanks for having me, as always.
Thank you.
Our pleasure. Thank you. Okay, Len, as always, okay, SB always brings the heat. He's got the receipts. He's a knowledgeable guy. Good questions there, I thought, from the chat, and great responses from him as well. I'm always curious about sentiment in finance, because it seems to me like when you talk to SB, you know, you and I are fortunate enough that he makes time for us sort of on a, you know, a daily basis when we're asking dumb questions about dumb shit, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, if we have that problem, we can always go to a guy like him to get a good answer and get a good response. Len just sent me a message in the private chat here. Here's a little business on air. We forgot to do the sponsors today. Yeah, we did. You want to do them right now? Let's do them right now.
Why not? This show is sponsored by a couple of
companies. We're sponsored by EasyDNS.
Yeah.
The best place, flagship sponsor, best place to host your content. They got all the services you need. Our website is live now. No more shit talk from you guys in the audience. Okay, listener, viewer, if you don't like it, I don't care. But if you want to write for the website, contribute to the website, tell Len, we'll look at your stuff. We'll probably put it up. We're not too picky, as long as it won't get us fired, demonetized, or otherwise garner attention of unwanted kind. We're happy to share.
It's all tongue in cheek anyways, yeah. Right? This is all satirical stuff.
We're happy to share the content of our listeners and viewers. Lots of stuff there. If you want to run a Nostr client, BTC Pay server, Bitcoin node on VPS, you can do it all there. Move your email over to your new domain. Mark will help you buy a domain. He'll help you maintain it. He'll set you up with someone who can build you a website. He will do all the things that you need to host your service. Plus, over there on EasyDNS, me and Len do another podcast, Access of Easy, for which you should leave a review on iTunes here. I'm crossing the fourth wall. We are going to start reading reviews that show gets during the other show. And we want reviews. We want ratings on iTunes. We're trying to grow that show. It's been fun so far. We want to keep going. Do that as well. All over on EasyDNS. If you use the code CBPMedia or tell Mark we sent you, you get 50% off your first buy. You can't beat that. No one gives you 50% off. I actually did get 50% off what I think was a pack of hamburgers at Fortino's today that might have been a day away from not being so good. But I had them for dinner. And so far, Len, I haven't had to get up from my seat. So today...
Does Fortino's sponsor us now?
Fortino's does not sponsor us. Although maybe we can get
them. If you mention our name, will they give people 50% off?
If you go to the Fortino's, if you go to the Fortino's on Upper James and Rymal and tell them Joey sent you, they'll ask, who is that? And tell you to pay the full price. So... anyway, EasyDNS, great, great sponsor. We love Mark. We hung out with him a lot at the conference. Can't wait to see him again. And we're looking forward to continuing our working relationship. Len, who's the other sponsor of the CVP?
It's Bull Bitcoin. They have a website. They have had one for quite some time, so can't diss them about that. And are also a great sponsor. We hope to continue working with them for a while, forever, hopefully. But it's a great place to buy Bitcoin. You could do that using the Bull Bitcoin suite of services that they offer. But you could sell your Bitcoin if you want to make some money. If maybe there was you bought this in the 15s or lower or whatever it is, and you want to sell it and make some dirty fiat added to your stack, well, you could do that with Bull Bitcoin. But why would you want to do that? But you could also buy Liquid and Lightning. So you're not just limited just to getting the on-chain. You could get also the other two options they have available at Bull Bitcoin. You could buy gift cards. You could sell... You could pay bills with Bitcoin on there, so you could live on the Bitcoin standard. But the best of all, the best thing I could find from all this that I truly love, and I hope you'd love it as well, Joey, is the KYC buys. KYC free, sorry, buys that you could do at Bull Bitcoin, where you could go to Canada Post, 6,000 locations throughout Canada, more locations for Canada Post than Tim Hortons in Canada. Imagine that.
Insane.
You exchange your dirty fiat and get KYC free Bitcoin. And from what I understand, there's been a lot of interest in this. There's a huge uptick in people using this service, the KYC free purchase. Love it. Check it out. We have a referral code below if you want to use it. If you haven't signed up, what are you doing? Use our code, and once you fund your account, $21 is going to be added to your account. No questions asked.
Pretty good. Not bad for a ad hoc mid-show
sponsor. Hey, we're all right. We've done this before.
I thought about once I realized we missed it, I didn't say anything when SB was on, obviously. And then I forgot. And then you just reminded me in the chat. I was going to just put it at the front with like a pre-read thing, which I
No. Let's do it so it's there. I know. Everybody can see it in the chat and all that jazz. But you know what? Let's go on.
Fair.
This is going to be an abbreviated episode with the rest of the topics. But let's talk about KPMG. And sure. They issued a pro Bitcoin paper or report. I'm not sure if you read this. It's not very long.
It's more pro mining than it is pro Bitcoin, right?
It talks about a whole bunch of things.
Yeah.
I mean, it talks about, it's not long. I think it's like 11 pages or so.
It's written for the layman, I might add.
Yeah. Yeah. They talk about Bitcoin, what it is. They mention it's a ledger that's immutable, that's secure. It discusses the roles of the nodes and also talks about how all these forks of Bitcoin, like Bitcoin Cash, for instance, they all got wrecked. It was written in this report, which is really cool. They also reference a 2022 chain analysis report about illegal and illicit use of digital assets. And Bitcoin's use by percentage is far less than stuff like ETH, stablecoins, or other shitcoins.
Sure.
So in terms of using it for illicit or illegal activities, Bitcoin by percentage doesn't stack up to the same like the other garbage out there. So stuff like ETH, stablecoins, and garbage like that, you know what? That's that it's for the people out there that are trying to do bad shit. Anyways, they talk about how Bitcoin could provide a number of benefits across an ESG framework. SB was talking about ESG just a little while ago. Mentioning in this report, it talks about stabilizing the grid, could provide heat to residential and commercial units. And it also mentions other benefits, such as the need of not carrying cash. And they brought up an example. For example, somebody that was trying to flee the Taliban in 2016. This is a very unique example that they brought up from several years ago. But it's some lady, she was fleeing the Taliban, and she had cash on her. And of course, that got stolen while she was trying to flee the country. But she was able to bring her Bitcoin with her. That's an interesting scenario that they brought forward. I thought it was... why would they put this in this KPMG report anyways? But they also talk about Bitcoin being decentralized, and it could have a play to reduce corruption and government overreach. And totally. Also financial markets may also like it due to its accountability and its transparency. But I do have to add one thing. I don't think anybody has really touched upon this. KPMG bought some Bitcoin and some ETH. By the way, they added it to her balance sheet back in February 2022.
We talked about this.
Yes,
when it happened. Do you remember what else they bought at the same time?
There was some artwork, if I recall correctly, or NFTs or something.
World of Women NFT collection.
Yeah, yeah.
How was the ROI on the WOW NFT collection? Any idea? Is that in the report?
Straight line down, just cratering, and yeah. So, anyways, I the way I'm looking at this. Maybe they want to pump their bags. They have Bitcoin in their balance sheet, and maybe this is one way they could pump the bags that they have. And it's not like they're doing something that's against the grain. Fidelity, we talked about that they're getting involved with Bitcoin. Morgan Stanley, they're purchasing MSTR. But BlackRock also filing for an ETF. There's a lot of winds blowing in the same direction, and KPMG is not going to blow against that. They're going to go with it as well. So they released this report. Timely. I think they've done it a strategic time to release it. More than anything, I think there's no FUD in this, which is good. But you know what? It is for a lot of people in one ear and out the other.
I really like this. I don't think it's in one ear and out the other. I think KPMG, we talk a lot about companies who can manifest outcomes on the finance side. I think KPMG on the accounting consulting, that side of things, that part of the equation, they're a manifester. They're a big four auditing firm. And so whether or not they did a good job with FTX and Silvergate and Silicon Valley Bank, you know, is one thing. Famously, you'll remember that we talked about how they audited, I believe, not only Silicon Valley, but also Silvergate, I think inside of 14 days before both collapsed. So
they missed important information. You know, yeah. You got to give them.
Where's your NFT collection? Where's your World of Women NFTs? So anyway, they missed those ones, but I will say that directionally, again, I think a theme that we should all kind of be paying attention to is that this is all going one direction now. KPMG doesn't have the same risk of ruin by promoting or suggesting positives or noticing some general trends about Bitcoin, mining, energy, decentralization, the importance of custody, you know, these self-custody assets. Because they're so big, they're monolithic in that space. And so what they're doing is, I think, just opening the door. And now let's see, Len, if some of these more boutique firms or some of the smaller firms start taking angles around some of the specifics in the report or some of the specifics that you and me talk about. Baseload energy, for example. Why is it important to have something that's got a demand response on your grid? What does it mean to have something that's demand response during the summer, during the winter? What examples of past incidences that could have been avoided, weather incidents that caused hardship to citizens in your region, in your jurisdiction, in your geographic area? How could this have been avoided through Bitcoin mining on your grid, for example? Things of this nature. The self-custody thing, you know, Len, it's only a matter of time until somebody points out that if Russian assets had not been held in U.S. treasuries and instead been held in Bitcoin, some level in Bitcoin, or instead of gold that they couldn't repatriate, they held it in Bitcoin, Venezuela or whoever, you know, in that example. I think it's only a matter of time until some people start to point these things out. It's funny because guys like you and me have been talking about this in our basements for, you know, I think closer to 10 years than to five at this point, which seems crazy to say. But these guys are starting to get it because I think they're starting to see that maybe all the things they were told are certain are anything but. And in a world like that, you're looking for alternatives, and there's some that really stick out more than others. Bitcoin is one of those, I think.
All roads lead to Bitcoin. And
yeah.
Well, let's move on. There's a bill called the 2024 National Defense Authorization Act, the NDAA. And I want to thank CoinDesk for this article because they provided a lot of the information that I have over here. The bill also includes some interesting provisions. The United States is famous for having very lengthy bills and throwing in shit that has nothing to do with the title of the bill itself. But anyways, with the additions specifically that provide and tighten up how financial institutions engage in crypto trading. More specifically, they're dealing, or they were talking about, the mixers that are now going to be put under the spotlight with this bill to prevent or limit the hiding of your tracks. So the people behind this include a few senators. One, notably, it's Elizabeth Warren. We talk about her quite a bit on the show, and I can understand why she's part of this and wanted to sponsor this. But the other one is Cynthia Lummis, which is interesting.
I told you this last week. I fucking said this last week that she sponsored this bill that was anti-coin mixer, and everyone should be paying attention to why she's doing it and whether or not this is another slay your heroes moment. I think it is. I think you're about to tell me that it is.
Yeah, I believe so. But she's been giving hints all along. So it's, unfortunately, I didn't catch them until now. So with this bill, they want to give power to the Treasury Secretary. So Janet Yellen is going to be able to do a little bit more. And what they're going to be able to give her is the ability to establish examination standards for crypto assets. And what this means, what they're trying to accomplish, is assessing the risk, compliance to limit money laundering, and adherence to sanction laws. And what bad could come from all of this? The bill will also give the power to the Treasury Department to start a study for combating anonymous crypto asset transactions, aka mixing services.
Yeah.
Lummis sent in a statement after this bill was announced, and this is quote straight from her: cracking down on illicit finance in the crypto asset industry is essential for weeding out bad actors and ensuring crypto assets are not used to evade sanctions and fund terrorism, end quote. So that's straight from Ms. Lummis's mouth. And back in mid-2022, she also said, so this is why I'm wondering, man, we missed this. Quote, we need to meet somewhere in the middle to make sure that bad actors are not taking advantage of the lack of regulatory clarity, but also that innovators can continue to develop new technology that weed, so I said, to make our world better, end quote. So really she's talking about, at that time, in code, about hiding your tracks, crypto mixing services, and anything along those lines. So really, we talked about negatively once this bill was first announced. This Lummis bill, it was part of something that was announced last year, and we talked about it negatively at that time. But here it is. It looks like it's been passed. And too bad. In the end, she is a senator first, and a Bitcoiner second. And it's too bad. This is the reality of it.
Okay, I'm going to stick my head out here. And at the risk of sounding like maybe I am losing focus on Bitcoin, let's first just talk about, this is important, obviously, because if you can't mix, there's a lot of people who won't be able to privatize transactions. And at some point, okay, I know you and me talk a lot about non-KYC Bitcoin because Bull is obviously a sponsor. You and me have been trying to buy non-KYC Bitcoin for a year now, probably, right? We've been talking about this offline.
Well, before Bull sponsored us, we had a previous sponsor. Touting them as a great place to buy Bitcoin because at the time, there was nothing as cheap for getting KYC free Bitcoin.
And it was. It was good. And all that stuff is great. Getting KYC free Bitcoin is important. But at some point, I think this is going to veer one of two ways, okay? You choose your way, Western man. One way, let's assume you don't want to sell your Bitcoin, okay, in this direction. One way, what you wind up with is having the KYC because you want to use your Bitcoin and take loans out against it. You want to borrow against the Bitcoin as the price appreciates. and never sell. And so it's more tax efficient this way, at least under the current structure. Okay. That's one way to do this. If you want to go this direction and never sell, you're going to have to KYC your non-KYC stack at some point, because every institution worth their salt who is governed by some nation state will demand that you identify not only who you are, but where you got the Bitcoin, probably when you got it, probably approximate price average, things of this nature. That's if you don't want to sell. I don't think there's a way around this, okay? So that's one thing that you got to, maybe stomach is the wrong word, but start thinking about what that looks like and whether or not you think that that's palatable for you and your non-KYC stack. Unless you sell it, you're going to have to identify it. That's number one. Number two is, if you don't want to use that route and you want to sell it but not identify who you are and not give up your identity vis-a-vis shitty privacy practices or UTXO mixing with KYC corn, then you need the mixing services, because you don't want to have these things tied to any one wallet recipient, any one send, anyone, anything. You want to have this stuff clean, and you can't do this without mixing services. Now, here's why I stick my head out a little bit. Samurai Wallet got a lot of flack. Yes, got a lot of flack online today and yesterday for this XMR BTC atomic swap. You may find that you need a service like this in the future.
The ends don't justify the means.
I'm not saying right now they justify anything. I'm saying that a service that looks like this, maybe not with another token, maybe not with that service, maybe not with that wallet, maybe not with that company, but a service that looks like this, where you can dip in and out of another network, whether it's Lightning, which you can't do right now because of channel balancing, it's impractical at large sums, or some other way to mask where the Bitcoin came from and where it's going after that. There's not a lot of options right now for this. Mixing is important for that reason. And I'm not saying Samurai is right or wrong, but I'm saying that you may find that the outline of a similar thing that you need in the future to use large sums of Bitcoin privately, if mixers are outlawed, looks like that. And I don't know if that's going against the mission. I'm not sure. In my view, the privacy thing is the most important piece of the non-KYC stack. If you don't want to sell it, then you have to identify. If you want to sell it, then you need the mixer. You should be using a mixer. And if you can't get the mixer, then what do you do? You're, right now, there's no other option. So maybe something looks like that in the future. What do you think? Am I out to lunch? Am I crazy? It sounds like you disagree, at least in the moment. But in the future, you're going to need something of this nature, I think.
Well, that's it, to assume that you're going to not want to pay capital gains on the sale of anything. That's the law of the land. If you have it, you want to sell it. And it's just, unfortunately, that's the reality of it. So based on that, I have no, man, I'm against this. I mean, even the Samurai thing, I mean, we could just transition to that. For people who are unaware, Samurai is the mixing wallet that you could, hide your track, so to speak, similar to what
it's a good service. Whirlpool Sparrow uses Samurai, I believe. I believe it uses Samurai Whirlpool to do the mixing on.
I don't care if it's good or bad, but the inclusion of a shitcoin, because you are using Monero if you're using the atomic swap side of things. The mixing side, I can't really speak much about it. If it's a good service or not, that's fine. But the inclusion of this, now they're adding the ability to do atomic swaps from Bitcoin to Monero and then back to Bitcoin as a way to cheaply and quickly cover your tracks. Again, the ends don't justify the means. You're propagating the use of a shitcoin that you cannot audit. You have no idea what is the supply of it currently, what is the supply of it going to be in the future, nor do you have any idea if it's been compromised right now. So I don't like that in any way, shape, or form. We should be educating Bitcoiners to get away from services like this and to not use it, to find something else. It may temporarily be harming you with respect to your privacy, but it is educating people to stay away from this garbage that people could potentially get hurt. It's Bitcoin. There is no second best. And Monero is far from second best.
But no one's saying you're not really using, you're not relying on things like the auditability of the chain. You're not relying on things like the value of the token necessarily. You're moving in really quick and then moving out.
The usage
really
of it
quick.
Is propagating the use and legitimizing the fact.
I don't think that that's true. If you don't have another option, what else are you going to do? Like in a world where they ban mixers, okay? If they ban mixers, Now there is something to be said that in a world where they ban mixers, the likelihood that XMR is banned is probably just as high. So
that's been delisted from a whole bunch of exchanges.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a great point to bring up. You're absolutely right about that. The question is like, do you want nothing else available to you, or do you want something that's like for a 15-minute transaction time? You know, like you go in, you obfuscate on the chain there and an XMR. You get Joey, whatever privacy guarantees. I don't know. Maybe we won't agree on this. No. It sounds like we may not agree, but I'm not sure.
Lightning is a private. I believe it's private. I don't think
it is private, but you can't use large sums at the moment. You just can't do it. Like that's a problem.
It's good for day-to-day purchases. If you want to spend $50, $100, something along those lines, it works absolutely perfectly for those types of scenarios. So why not use that more so? Instead of doing large dollar purchases, if you have a large stack of KYC Bitcoin, use Lightning and start chopping away at your KYC stack.
LBTC, all caps in the chat. Join Market, Wasabi, Lightning, Payjoins. There's other. I'm not saying there's no other options. I'm saying there's nothing wrong with one more option.
If it includes a shitcoin, yes, there is. the encouraging the use of it is enabling it to stay in existence and encouraging people to buy into it.
You're propagating.
I do not want that. People will get wrecked in the end. Like I said, it could be compromised right now. We have no way to analyze that. How much is in the supply right now? No way to analyze that.
You can't know.
Bitcoin, it's a ledger. It's an open ledger. I could use my node, check anything I want quickly, easily, and it's fucking verified. Well,
I know.
Not the other one. That's a shitcoin.
The benefits, they're not lost on me. You're right. I get that. I'm just saying.
The ends don't justify the means, and that's where I stand.
Okay.
A hill I'm gonna die.
That's all right. That's all right. Okay. What's next?
All right, let's move on. We could talk about. Let's see what else. This is a good one. Rare BTC. It's for sale.
I love this.
Okay, let's do this. Okay. Bitcoin Magazine. They're at it again. Remember, these are the people that are affiliated with a conference that paid for somebody to go there and to dance like a fucking fool, the same that they did at Ethereum conferences. And so what did Bitcoin Magazine do this time? They have launched a new service to allow for collectors and for people of means to snap up what they deem to be, quote, the rarest sats and inscriptions on the market, end quote. So in other words, they want to sell you a sat for more sats. That is a fucking scam, if you ask me. Some of these rare inscriptions, I took a peek. I don't even fucking believe I took the time to do this, but I did this for you, ladies and gentlemen, and everybody else. Some of them are on sale right now. They're trying to sell one sat for 15 Bitcoin. They're trying to sell one sat for 1.5 billion sats. That is a huge markup for absolute trash that does nothing to anybody. We talked about Hive in the past and the green Bitcoin. This falls along the same category. If you don't like the green Bitcoin stuff and selling Bitcoin at a higher price because it's been mined with green energy, the same thing applies here. It's all speculative garbage. It provides no functionality, added functionality besides from, oh, look at this. I have a picture that's associated to a sat. Give me a fucking break.
I love this. I want to congratulate friend of the show, Mark Goodwin. I'm becoming the editor-in-chief of Bitcoin Magazine. I think he's a good Bitcoiner. And, I've talked to him a little bit. I talked to him obviously before and after the show, and I've talked to him a little bit on Twitter from time to time. And I think he's going to do his best to right that ship as much as he can. I think he will. I think he's got the chops to do it. And I think he's a lot more mission focused than its previous brass. That aside, congratulations to Mark. I hope he does a great job. That aside, the rare sats thing. I can't remember if we talked about this during the after show where we talked about how Frank or his team canceled on us. But basically,
we talked about it on the after show.
We did talk about Frank, but I don't remember if we talked about the questions I had for Frank. And the questions I had really revolved around the rare sats thing a little bit. And one of the questions was just like, hey, man, I don't think a lot of people care about this. I think this is like a thing that has come and gone. As transaction fees go up, no one's going to be willing to go through this level of payment for a sat, blah, blah, blah. Like as adoption goes up, no one's going to care about the pictures that were, you know, going around 20 years ago on Bitcoin or 10 years ago. It's just not going to matter. And it's not a reliable business model. What I'm surprised to see from Bitcoin Magazine is that they seem to think that not only can they create the rare ordinal sats, but also charge people to use a service on which to sell them. Do I have that right? I believe that I do. So they're going to be kind of like a...
Taking it from both sides, taking it like, as a percentage of the cut, but also propagating.
Taking it from both sides is maybe the rated R version. I was going to say vertically integrated ordinals outfit, but either way.
Yeah, but it's another good vertically integrated. Well said. Yeah. It's a corporate way of saying it. But they're going to be scamming people on two fronts. That's a better way to say it.
I'm pretty sure you can look up taking it from both ends on Pornhub, but you probably can't look up vertical integration. You probably won't get good results.
Maybe you would. Who knows?
I don't know. So I don't understand how they're able to do this and still expect that people are going to be like, yeah, cool. No problem. Like, they're really, I think, resting on their laurels a little bit with some of the old OG Bitcoiners. I don't think we're OG Bitcoiners. It's 2017. You know, I don't view myself like that. I think you have to be one of these like 2014 Bitcoin was $1,000 types. And I think the Bitcoin magazine has served as a very important note between normie world and Bitcoin world, because it's a publication that's well produced. Whether you appreciate the content or the direction is a whole other story, but that's a well produced piece of literature during the quarterly releases. It's in normie bookstores, in a place where, you know, are books a luxury good? Probably, I would say. You don't get a lot of poor people buying a lot of books. They don't have the money, and so that's kind of the target audience too. People who are curious enough to be in a bookstore on a Saturday afternoon instead of at the bar. That's the kind of person you want reading about Bitcoin and getting into Bitcoin and thinking about Bitcoin and problems with the fiat system and all these things. So that I view them as an important note. I think they've done important work, and I think they've made some mistakes along the way. I don't get how they thought this was a good idea. All caps in the chat saying what I think a lot of us are thinking about Matt Odell. Matt Odell's been affiliated with Bitcoin Magazine for a long time. He was an advisor. He helped plan the conference. He did a podcast actually with CK after this year's conference where they did a debrief. I've talked about it on the show before, I believe, or I'm having deja vu. But in any case, they have some disagreements about the nature of the conference and what should happen going forward. And so it seems like that divide now between the direction of the magazine, the direction of the company. Again, there's two entities there, right? Bitcoin Magazine is underneath a larger umbrella company that may be driving this other initiative. That other company, by the way, drives the conference, not the magazine proper. So that's a delineation worth noting. But all said, maybe the differences now are too large for Odell to continue to be affiliated with them. I would posit to you as well that Casey Rodimer has completely stopped doing any podcast interviews, even though I'm sure a lot of people want to talk to him about this kind of stuff. And he continues, I think, to kind of find ways to piss people off. Like, as if the ordinals thing wasn't enough. Then I think he tried to run a sales platform for ordinals for a time. Now he's apparently part of this initiative with Bitcoin Magazine. So like, did Bitcoin Magazine approach him and say, hey, this is a great idea, we want to work with you, or vice versa? In either case, it's not a very generous interpretation of events for either party. Both kind of come out looking like they don't really care about the mission. Ordinals, long and short, I think they're going to be short-lived. I know I've said that for about 8 months now. I think we got to be getting close.
It's not that long. It has not been 8 months.
When did we have Dion on the show you refused to attend to talk about ordinals? I forget now. When was that? March? Is that in the spring?
Yeah, I'm guessing it hasn't been 8 months. This has not been going on since the beginning of the year.
When I build the new CBP studio, I'll have him over to my house and we'll talk about ordinals. He can tell me why this is a good thing for Bitcoin and et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, perfect. Think about this too, though,
right? Like, because now I'm thinking about the stuff that Dish told me about Show Me. Like, there's like a market for Bitcoin influencer trading cards that people seem to want to buy. Like,
that's
what's
fine.
Worse?
That's
what's
outside
worse, you think that's better? Yeah. Okay.
That doesn't bloat the chain.
This is the node runners still the fee structures and all that. Yeah.
Well, okay. It doesn't bloat the chain. You're right. And I wasn't even going to bring that up, but that's another point. The fact that it raises transaction fees, but it bloats the chain. If you're a node runner and you're getting to the point where it's getting close for what you have in terms of storage, you're going to bust it soon. You may have planned out it would have been lasting you much longer, but now they're throwing all these fucking JPEGs on it. And well, unfortunately, the space you have is no longer sufficient, and you now have to upgrade or mothball your node, which absolutely sucks. So that's you know, if you go back, if you want to talk about the block size wars, they didn't want to increase the size of the blocks because it would make it harder to become a node runner. And now they've instituted an idea, a way for people to throw shit on the blockchain and make it bigger. Like, it's going against the whole thing for the block size wars. Like, so that's why the trading cards, I have no problem. That's something outside. If people want to do that,
this continues, in my view, this continues to be a fair criticism, I think, whether or not you agree with this whole, they're playing by consensus rules, and so they should be allowed to do it. It's not being done in the spirit of the rules. I think we agree on that. And whether or not that's a legitimate gripe, I don't know, but I think it's fair. And I don't think the Ordinals crowd has a good rebuttal for that, honestly. Even
it's
today,
all speculative.
They seem to be missing on that.
Some people will say Bitcoin is speculative. But the not reality
really.
Is
not really, not anymore.
It's a commodity. It's now it's out there. It's a commodity, right? So let's move on and talk about an adjacent subject. There's now a push to remove the 80 byte limit on op returns. So right now there's a limit, and up until this Taproot thing, 80
we're
byte.
Going, we're going deep on. We're going deep on tech today. Okay.
Yeah. Sure. Well, we don't have much time. We gotta whip through this. So there's a push now to try to eliminate this limit, and I don't understand again. With the block size war and everything that I talked about, what's the point of trying to institute a higher limit or eliminating the limit altogether? Really, this is going to empower or encourage the shitcoin crowd to come in and dump their shit on our blockchain. The fact that node runners right now they're dealing with higher block sizes with all these JPEGs. Now you want to take the op return out. To me, it doesn't make sense why anyone would want to do this. Don't fuck with our money. You know, if you look fundamentally what Bitcoin is, it's basic form. It's you have a sat, you can send it to somebody else and somebody can send it back to you. That's it. That's money. That's the way transactions should be done. The throwing on of the 80 bytes for the op return, I'm okay with that. Simple, quick messages. You want to do something like that? You pay for it, get it done. It's not going to pollute the network. It's not going to make it that much larger. But now you're trying to eliminate that. Yeah. That I'm against. And you know what? Typically, when there's a change like this that comes to Bitcoin, I'm now on the stance. Anytime anybody wants to put a change, I'm automatically against it. I'm happy the way Bitcoin is right now. Any sort of change, I'm against it. I could switch. I could learn about it and become pro that change. But this is a situation where I'm against it, and I'm going to stay against it. There's reasons why. Number one, David Bailey is pro it. Anything David Bailey is these days pro it, I'm against it. So my stance immediately is against it, and I'm going to stay there. Second, Paul Stork, the guy behind DriveChain, is also for it. Again, if I'm against what he's saying, it just solidifies the standing where I'm right now. I am in the right side of the fence. This shit is fucking garbage. You know, when they take this away, what are the unintended consequences? We can't plan this. This is our fucking money. Let's not fuck with it. Leave it alone. 80 bytes, I'm happy with it. Don't fuck with it.
Okay, I'm with you. Shouldn't be fucked with. This is, by the way, a great example of the remnant versus the masses. As Bitcoin grows in popularity, like, this is the thing I really have a problem with, okay? Let me try and parse this as best I can, given that we're a little low on time. Bitcoin grew in popularity based on the way that it functions and behaves right now. It's gone from $0 to $30,000 or wherever it is, you know, as high as $70,000 over the last 2 years, and has now started to, I think, even in the most bearish interpretation of recent events, it has started to become a thorn in the side of traditional financial systems, markets, and probably in the thorn, a thorn in the side of the US dollar and other currencies around the world as well. It was popular enough to gain that support from people who have shown up, presumably from other tokens that had these functions or functionality or flexibility or malleability and failed. And yet those same people who arrive here after those features were part of a failing package to a coin that garnered popularity without those functions, and they want to change it. I don't understand this thinking. This to me is the same as, you know, to really kind of dumb it down, Democrats fleeing Democratic states and then continuing to vote for Democrats in a new place and wondering why there's fentanyl addicted junkies and rampant drug use all over the streets after 20 years. Well, I have a hint for you. You didn't change your behavior, and this is the result you basically invited. Bitcoin is in the same position now. And this remnant versus masses thing begins to come into play. The remnant is what got us here, right? People who were focused, like you always say, on the money, unfuckwittable money. Why should I change it for the masses? The masses don't matter. What matters is the potency of the medium, the potency of the message, and the potency, in this case, of the asset. And if you take away that potency to please a bunch of people who don't really know what they want, only that they want something different, you lose the battle on all fronts. And so I'm with you on this. I think that any changes should be done via hard fork. And if that token wins out, ooh, God bless them. No, like Bitcoin has to stay Bitcoin. If they want to try something else, copy it. Maybe hard.
Oh, you mean us? So because yeah, hard fork is yeah, yeah. Okay.
If they want to try something on their own, copy it.
Okay, I'm good with that. Yeah.
Run a competitive token, and you know from there, do whatever you want. Yeah, sorry, soft fork is what I should have said.
With the Bitcoin camp, Bitcoin proper, soft fork all the way. We have compatibility too.
And you do whatever you want with your token. And if you get the popularity that you so seek, that you believe you will get by making these changes that are, revolutionary and will bring people in and will increase adoptability and increase usage, you go for it. But don't fuck with what we got, because what we got brought you here, and what you had forced you here, and you seem to have forgotten those things along the way. The outcome is, I think, more or less the same. They're going to lose that fight.
Bitcoin Independence Day took place this past week, August 1st. It came and it went, and we celebrated the 6th annual Independence Day, and it commemorated the UASF, the user activated soft fork, that circumvented uncooperative miners back in the day. Yeah. The block size war. We the third time we're talking about it right now. The significance of this should not go unnoticed, because it demonstrated that node runners have a lot of power, even more so than a bunch of uncooperative miners that are banding together. And it so decentralized works in the end. Node runners have a lot of power, and this basically jettisoned the SegWit 2x, the idea to increase the block size, and it was dumped in favor of SegWit. And so decentralized won that day. But funny enough, the person that is running the Noster account for Blockstream, they must have been on crack that day. The reason why, because they were talking about how August 1 was obviously Independence Day for Bitcoiner, but they made no reference to the UASF. They were talking about SegWit and they were talking about the technicals, and they got the technicals wrong about it. Luke-Ear or whatever. I don't even know how to pronounce his name. Anyways, he's banned from Twitter, but on Noster, he still exists. And he was actually talking about replying to the Blockstream note and pointing out all the errors in their way. I just want to point out Independence Day took place, but Blockstream, whoever's running this, this person needs to understand what is going on. Maybe they should learn a little bit more about history, because it's looking real bad on their front from doing this. They seem to be doing a lot of bad things these days. I mean, a lot of bad takes, but it could be wrong.
What a win for decentralization user-activated softworks are. Is there a better story of... And this is, by the way, like one thing when people are like, oh, we shouldn't, that shouldn't have been the mechanism we use, blah, blah, blah. Len, we just went through, 2 years ago when that mining council kind of took shape?
What right? did he do?
You know what I mean? So why would you leave anything in the hands of miners? Like as they become more corporate. Now, I don't know if this was, easily predictable. I would suggest that it wasn't. But, if we had left things in the hands of miners, you're basically just handing things over to the government. These publicly traded companies have boards. Like we would honestly, Len, like it's, that's
you're
a
right.
Huge
you're
it's a huge moment that we didn't know. We didn't really know how big it was at the time, but it ended up being fucking massive, man. Like 2 years later, it was a fucking big deal that we had this thing in place already. And the miners were no longer control the network. That's a huge deal. And unless we get more decentralization, you're going to be even happier. That happened. And I think we both are kind of pulling for decentralization of mining, both in terms of geography and I think in terms of like just the number of people, individuals, entities, whatever, whether it's corporations or just regular folks like you and me mining. It's better for the network like this, for it to continue that way. And so I hope that it does. I hope that it does.
I don't think we're going to see a lot more garage miners hook up.
No,
hash rates in the network. It's really going to be large entities that are doing stuff, mostly oil and gas. I think that's going to be the wild card in all this. But let's do one, maybe two more stories.
Sure. Here.
Tether, they're slowly becoming a monster. And we talked about this with SB earlier, and I just want to add some color to this. They held $3.3 billion in reserve assets. That's in excess to back the value of its stablecoin as late as Q2. That's a lot of money have accumulated. Their profits for the quarter, this is according to BDO Italia, so who knows if this is true or not. Anyways, the profits for the quarter were in excess of $1 billion. And in comparison, BlackRock, we know this big, huge company, they made $1.6 billion in Q2. So there is somewhat of a comparable there. 1.6 to 1 is a big jump, but it's kind of within the same ballpark. And I wonder, I mean, I wanted to ask SB this, but I'm wondering how much longer they can maintain this whole operation, because there will become a point in time, I think, that the U.S. will intervene in one way, shape, or form, either through the outlaw of USDT on U.S. soil, maybe even a cancellation of the Treasury, the T-bills, or the bonds that they have. There's going to be something that I think that could ultimately screw over Tether, because if you look at what Tether does, they provide somewhat of a competition to the U.S. dollar. I know it's backed one-to-one. It's not adding any more, but still, there is some competition. If the U.S. wants to sanction something with their dollar, they could do it, especially digitally. But when stable coins like Tether start interacting and you start using that, it's outside the realm of the U.S.'s purview. It's under Tether's purview. So if the United States wants to sanction anything, it can't be done under Tether. So I'm wondering if there's going to be something in the near future that's going to impact Tether moving forward. But there's also one other thing, and I don't think a lot of people talked about this. They seem to be expanding now into Bitcoin mining software. They have a development team in Tether, and they're getting ready to launch some new JavaScript libraries, which is going to specifically designed to transfer command and signals to Bitcoin mining hardware, like WhatsMiner, Avalon Miner, and Antminer devices. They say this software will be high quality, polished, and modular. So that sounds good. Open source, really good. And it will result in the mining capacity to be managed more efficiently. So it's going to be something along the lines, from what I gather, like what Brains OS does. So they're now expanding into other spheres, to other areas. It's good to have competition. I don't think I trust whatever that they release, at least not at the onset. I'd like to see what's going on. It is open source. That's good. But they're expanding their reach. So there's a lot going on with Tether. They're slowly becoming a monster, man.
They're, I think, positioning themselves. I disagree with you that the U.S. can disrupt this, because they position themselves in a way that they could really give the U.S. a hard time. Like I mentioned when SB was on, I believe they are the 13th, maybe, largest holder of U.S. treasuries in the world. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if the U.S. wants to go ahead and cancel more T-bills, like, okay, fine. You're really throwing a wrench in your own debt vehicle if you do that. You've done it once with Russia. That sends a lot of people going the other direction. This is another thing that could send a lot of people going another direction. They also own, it looks to me like there's, I just have this Reuters article up here. They have, yeah, not much in terms of other treasury bills, but they got enough to give the U.S. a problem, I think. And I imagine that this is something they've done on purpose, right? They, between the Bitcoin holdings and the treasury, the T-bill holdings, doesn't really look like the U.S. can do much short of something that's, you know, widely considered to be unpalatable by most, you know, people. I don't know. Maybe it wouldn't be. I mean, Karine Jean-Pierre will get up there and tell you that, you know, it's Russian misinformation that we're upset about it. But to me, it looks like they're in a good spot. Are you still firmly in the camp that Tether is going to at some point unwind?
No, US BUSD is the one that I've been talking about.
But you talk about Tether too. And so, like,
well, Tether.
And by the way, there's really smart guys. You're a smart guy. I trust that you've done your research. And so when you see something, I listen. Other smart guys, Doomberg, Mike Green, I think they're wrong about a lot of stuff about Bitcoin, but they all point to this. Tether is printing fake dollar bills and using them to prop up the price of Bitcoin. I don't know. I don't think they are. It looks to me like
argument. That's a totally different argument. The unwinding of USDT has zero to do with the price of Bitcoin, if it's propping it up or not. So I'm going to just answer the unwinding of it. I believe that they do have they're backed one-to-one, or at least close to it. And the fact that they now, if you buy anything to do with treasuries, T-bills, you're getting a handsome rate right now in return. So these guys are making hand over fist for the past.
Well, this is their trade, right? Like they buy 55 or 65 billion in T-bills, the rate, and they're rolling the profits from the T-bills into more T-bills in Bitcoin.
Yes.
Like
what's the overhead they have?
Great strategy.
Yeah,
They have 20 employees. They are the Nick Carter said this on Off the Brink. I didn't look this up to see if it was true, but he's probably right. Are they the most profitable company per employee that's ever existed? They got to be. It's got to be close.
I can't even fathom another one. So maybe not. I don't know. But what I'm trying to get at is I think that they're on sound footing on that side. But if something were to disrupt it, say the cancellation of what they have, then that would obviously be catastrophic to their operations, and it would cause an unwind, and it would just topple wayside. But the current state right now, if nothing changes, no, it's going to continue, and it's going to continue on its merry way. And it's the perfect system. It's the perfect business because they're able, like as you say, roll over their profits. They're buying some of it with Bitcoin and gold. I believe they're also buying some gold too, right? So they're adding stuff to their balance sheet with the profits that they make. And those profits, they're growing because, well, rates keep increasing too. So, right. You know, I'm looking at that. That's why the United States, they can't be looking at this and say, let's keep this going. I think that some point in time, they're going to say, you know what? They're kind of a competitor. They're taking away our ability to sanction anything to do with US dollar, because you can't sanction USDC if they have it and they're using it. But you can sanction US dollar if you have control of it. So I can see them saying, fuck it, we're going to stop this and we're not going to honor anything that they've, you know, they've bought.
It's not palatable though. Is it? Like, I don't think that it is.
I don't think it matters at this point. The United States is on its last legs.
I know, but do you remember the stories when they did this to Russia? Like, and that was of, you know, a country that, I mean, really wearing the, you know, that they were the matador for everybody for a year, you know, maybe still are for some percentage of the population who's still rocking a flag on their porch or in their Twitter handle. But anyway, I don't know.
But you know,
let's wrap it up. But let's just note here that Len has softened his stance on Tether, it sounds like,
from last year.
You don't think?
I don't know if I've softened it. I mean, it may have morphed, but I think that it's on sound footing as long as nothing is changing.
It's not softer. It's just
morphy. That's a better way to say it. No, like there are others that I have real concerns with. Circle, I fucking...
Circle's like a US dollar on US soil, domiciled in the USA, et cetera. Like, I don't know. That's not a terrible one. I don't think not as deep or liquid, but it's not... Like, it's hard for me to imagine.
You know what? That one's gonna get tits up. The reason why I hate all these things, there's a white list. And then when there's a white list, there's a black list. You don't, that is bloody awful. When you have the ability to censor like that and tell people that they don't have access to their funding, fuck you, man. That's why we Bitcoin. But yeah, man. That's it, man. Like, we have still more to talk about. But, you know, it's 1:30. We're done.
Yeah. Let's do Bitcoin or no coin of the week. I just have a no coiner. That is not really a no coiner. It's more just an article that I saw the other day. I think Martin Peltier shared it. Is it a Martin Peltier or Sylvain Charlebois? I forget who. I'm going to share it on my screen here because I think people need to see this if they haven't seen it. I think I tweeted it out. This really like fucking blows me away, honestly, that this is being put out here. So this is from CTV News for people who are on audio. The headline is Canada's inflation rate is falling. So why are groceries still more expensive? Clearly here, a misunderstanding between falling inflation rate and falling prices. Okay. This is the level of competence in your media. Now, if we scroll down here, I'm just going to double my screen space here so I can scroll. Canada's inflation rate tumbled 2% or 3%, I should say, in June, blah, 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 reaching the country's target rate. Minister Freeland, a milestone moment. Why are Canadians still feeling the pinch? Why are Canadians still feeling the pinch at the grocery store? Wait until you see the reasons they got for you at CTV.
It's
you're going to love them.
That's right. It's a white screen right now.
Don't worry.
Oh, there it is. Okay.
Here we go. Here we go. Okay. Here are the reasons, Len. The Canadian dollar declines in value. Oh. That's a problem. That's one thing. Extreme weather and climate change causing problems at the grocery store. Okay. Geopolitical turmoil causing problems at the grocery store. Supply chain issues from the pandemic causing problems. Labor shortages causing problems. Big grocers dictating food prices causing problems. When will food prices go down? No one seems to know. Okay. Incredible. Now, just for fun, like all those reasons are fucking bullshit. The reason everything's so expensive is because these guys printed a bunch of money during COVID and they shouldn't have. That's a story for
another time. Well, they mentioned the Canadian dollar declined in value. That's the correct answer.
But they're not taking any blame. Okay. They're not taking any blame. Here's the related stories. This is incredible stuff. To give you an idea of where we are, stores risk losing younger shoppers with anti-theft measures targeting self-checkouts. Retail expert. Thank you for that. Big global brands drove supplier prices higher in second quarter. Blah, blah. Okay. Price fixing, basically. I'm done with Canada. High cost of living leads some to leave the country. That's inflation sad. Inflation relief felt largely at Canada's gas pumps. No, it's fucking not. No, it's fucking not. These are the foods costing you more, according to the latest inflation report. Food inflation, how Canada's stores compare to other nations. Grocery prices unlikely to fall anytime soon, experts say. And Canada's finance minister calls inflation rate dropping within target range a milestone moment. This is why when you ask a millennial or a Zoomer or a Gen Xer why they don't trust anything they see in the press, this is why. Now, is CTV incompetent or are they lying? It's one of the two. Guarantee you that. And so for this nonsense spin to make your fucking head turn, man. CTV gets my No Coiner of the Week award this week.
That's a good one. And I saw that article. I laughed. And
I honestly couldn't believe it.
And I'll be quick. I don't have a Bitcoiner, but I have a No Coiner. And it's going to be a bunch of people. And I'm going to be really quick. It's the people behind the rare sats, the rare Bitcoin that they're trying to do, all the people behind it. Also, the opportune people, don't fuck with their money. So guys like David Bailey's, Paul Zdork, and all those other people, just fuck off. We don't want you to deal with fuck around with our money. So those are my No Coiners of the Week.
Paul Zdork, good luck to Mark Goodwin, new chief editor-in-chief of Bitcoin Magazine. Godspeed on writing that ship. And stick around for the after show. Wednesday, unknown guest of the moment. Ryan told me
you know what?
Time Wednesday. We need a guest on Wednesday.
No.
We don't have one. What are we going to do?
Let's, you know what? We have our Canadian stories we haven't talked about today. Let's do that Wednesday.
You want to do it Wednesday?
Let's do it Wednesday. Sure. Continuation from this.
We'll see you at 7 o'clock Wednesday. And until then, take care of yourselves. After show's up next.
Take care. PV, and don't be a cuck.